I'm Dave Thompson. This is the third part of our series, Energy Issues and Answers, Oil Well Reclamation. In this part, we talk with North Dakota Mineral Resources Director Lynn Helms about what happens when an oil well is actually reclaimed and what the next steps are going to be. We've talked about the reasons for doing this. We've talked about plugging a well, and now we get into the reclamation of wells, which is going to be a real undertaking for the next several weeks, isn't it?
Oh, that's right, Dave. This involves at least 50% of the funding for the project, but may well involve a lot more than 50% of the work, because restoring the landscape to its original contours and its original productivity is a long-term big job. And we've learned so much and come up with so many new technologies to apply over the last, say, 10 or 20 years. So for the first 20 years or so that reclamation was being done, 1981 through 2001, when the Oil and Gas Division was formed, after the Oil and Gas Division was formed in 1981, reclamation was done pretty much just visually. Everything was observed and, you know, the contours were put back, but pretty much just visually, and likewise, the review of the site for contamination, all of that revegetation was done visually. Today, we've got drones. We have cameras that can measure everything from red-green visual to near-infrared, so they can tell the difference between gravel and scoria. They can tell the difference between broadleaf weeds and grass. They can even tell whether or not a weed or plant is healthy based on the spectrum that it reflects. And so we can apply drone technology. We also have the ability to measure the electrical conductivity of the soil. And so we can go across a site in a grid and check for salt contamination or hydrocarbon contamination with scientific instruments instead of just visually looking at it to see if there appears to be some contamination.
So can you walk me through how the process begins then once the well is capped and now you've got the crew on site to start doing reclamation? What do they do?
Great. So once that well is capped 4 feet below the contour depth so that it won't interfere with agriculture, the very first thing that they do is take an inventory of equipment and surfacing material. And all of that equipment has to be demolished and removed. It has to go to scrap iron dealers, or in some cases it's usable and it'll go into a used equipment sale. All of that equipment has to be surveyed for T-norm to make sure that any solids that are in it, tank bottoms or material that's in the treater, whether it can go to a special waste landfill or whether it needs to go to a landfill that can handle the higher levels, which is T-norm. So we have to survey all that.
Let's explain that T-norm a bit.
Yeah,
so
thank you.
For people who don't know.
So T-norm is technically enhanced natural occurring radioactive material. It's an acronym for that. Technically enhanced or naturally occurring radioactive material. Everything in the earth has some level of radioactivity, and in the process of producing oil and gas, that radioactive material can get concentrated in the solids in the bottom of a tank or in a filter sock, as most of us are familiar with. And if those levels get too high, then there's enough radioactivity given off by that material that it needs to be handled in a special way. It has to go to a special landfill, has to be disposed of in a particular way, and has to be handled by licensed people who can handle radioactive material.
So where are those landfills?
The only landfills today that are licensed to take this are in eastern Montana, and in Colorado and Idaho. And so depending on the level of T-norm, it may be low enough to go into a special waste landfill. Those are located in McKenzie, Williams, Mountrail, and Dunn County, one in Stark County, I believe. Or if it's a bit higher, it can go to eastern Montana. If it's significantly higher, it has to go to landfills or disposal operations in either Colorado or Idaho.
All right. Once you assess the T-norm then and you start digging it out if you want and getting rid of it and it goes to these landfills, what happens next?
So after the solid material, anything that is T-norm contaminated or solid material is removed, then all that equipment comes off the site. The surfacing material, gravel or scorial, whatever it is, has to be removed, and that can be reused on a road somewhere, or it may have to go to a landfill. And then we survey the site. So we'll go across the site in a grid with an electrical conductivity meter and take measurements. We'll look at the spill history that's in the well file. We have very good well files these days, and so some of these sites have a history of multiple spills, and we'll look at that very carefully to make sure that we evaluate if any of that contaminated material is still there. And once the site has cleared all that, then it can be recontoured back to blend in with the natural contours of the land, whether it's a farm field or a hill where we're going to graze cattle. And topsoil is placed back on it, a minimum of 6 inches. And then it is seeded either to the farmer's wishes or the land manager's wishes. Might be the North Dakota Department of Trust Lands, might be the U.S. Forest Service, or it might go to a native grass species. We actually have a specific native grass mixture that will seed. And then we watch. And so over a period of, it could be 1 year or it could be 10 years, that we watch to see that the vegetation actually grows appropriately. And we can do that now with drones. Used to be you had to walk into the site. The road is gone, so the site could only be accessed by walking in and walk around the site to look at it. But since we've done a preliminary drone evaluation, we know pinpoint accurately right where that wellbore was, and we can send a drone to that site and take pictures from multiple altitudes and evaluate the vegetation that's growing and make a decision whether we're going to do a final walk-in review and whether we're going to release the bond or release the site.
So in many respects, it's very similar to lignite coal reclamation.
In many respects, it really is. The goal is to put the materials back the way you found them, to remove any extraneous stuff that you put on the land, put everything back to its original contour and shape, put topsoil on it, and make sure that native vegetation or field crops are growing properly.
So is it your department that determines that reclamation has been successful or more work is needed to be done on it?
It is the Oil and Gas Division, and we have a reclamation specialist, graduated with a degree in soil science, and we have a second position that's right now vacant, but for a reclamation specialist. And so we have two positions within the department that do that. Now, occasionally, when we go out to reclaim one of these sites, we'll find that there is serious contamination, or there's contamination that has gotten off the well site onto the surrounding land. At that point, we bring in the Department of Environmental Quality, and they've got specialists who specialize in cleaning up those types of contamination incidents. And in those cases, we're not going to go forward with recontouring and putting the topsoil on. We're going to stabilize the site over the next winter. We will write a long-term remediation plan, and then we'll implement that next year. So we won't be able to use CARES Act dollars for that if the current deadline holds, but we do have an abandoned well and site restoration fund, and there's money in that fund. In fact, the legislature dedicated $10 million out of that fund for this project. So there'll be money there to do the long-term remediation.
I have to ask, because you mentioned $10 million, is $10 million going to be enough?
That's a great question, Dave, and it's a good starter amount, but there is $7.5 million per year that comes into that fund, a very small slice of the gross production tax. So the fund is replenished by the oil industry through its gross production tax, and so $7.5 million a year comes into that fund. If the $10 million isn't enough, there's an income stream that can be dedicated to longer-term remediation.
So there is a backup plan, basically a fallback plan.
Yep, there absolutely is. And based on reviewing the spill histories of these 400 sites that we think we're going to be working on, 30 or 40% of them have multiple spill reports. And so we're particularly interested in surveying those. And it's highly likely that 30 to 40% is going to need a long-term remediation plan, that they won't be completed this year.
So we might as well just say that this is not going to be an overnight thing. You have to make sure things are done carefully, things are done environmentally sensitively, if I wanted to put it that way, and just correctly. So at the end result, it's back to farmland.
That's absolutely true. And so when you think about originally someone planned an oil well there and they carefully engineered the access road and the well site and the well itself, we are deconstructing all of that decades later. And so we almost have to go step by step in removing every bit of that infrastructure and every bit of that construction work that went on, so that ultimately, when we've done our job right, it blends into the landscape and someone driving by on a county road would never know that there had been a well site there.
And of course, this also, you know, shows some contrast of technology then and technology now, I guess, when it comes to drilling wells too.
Yes, absolutely. So we're looking forward, and fortunately, we've learned so much over the 60 years that this reclamation process has been going on, in particularly in intensively in the last 40 years. The first reclamation rules were put in place in 1981 for oil and gas. And so those have been rewritten and amended 9 times since then as technology has developed and we've learned about the variety of North Dakota soils and plants and precipitation and all that sort of thing. We've learned a lot. So today, when a company proposes permitting a well or a site, we think about reclamation from the very beginning. Where's the topsoil going to be stockpiled? Can it be used in a field and then retrieved 40 years from now to reclaim the site? How is this site going to be recontoured? We have the ability now to look forward and say, let's build this site in a way that's going to make it easier to reclaim. But when you drive by one of those Bakken locations with 25 or 30 wells on it, that's an immense piece of real estate, and that reclamation project's going to be huge 40, 50 years from now.
But in terms of these older wells, the rules are different now. Do you have to truck in topsoil?
Yes, the rules have changed, Dave. And so back when these wells were drilled, in fact, the one that I was on earlier this week was drilled in 1979, there was no rule that they had to stockpile topsoil or place topsoil in the farmer's field where it could be retrieved and used for the reclamation. We're actually going to have to purchase topsoil and truck it in order to reclaim these sites because, as we stated before, 70% of them are 1985 and earlier, and there was no rule about topsoil at that time.
So have you contacted farmers who own these fields that, hey, we're coming in to do some reclamation work, and what's been the reaction from them?
Well, thank you for bringing that up. I failed to mention that, but one of the critical pieces of this whole process is that the reclamation plan has to be provided to the farmer at least 10 days before any dirt moves, before any equipment is dismantled or anything happens. So they have an opportunity to look at it, to voice their opinion. There are times where a farmer says, you know, I'd like this road and this flat place to put some grain bins. And so we'll build that into the reclamation plan. We may stop short of putting topsoil on it, but we'll still make sure all the surfacing material is gone, all the T-norm's gone, all the equipment is gone, any contamination is removed. But if the farmer wants that flat place and that access road for some type of farming operation, they can request that. So they're all contacted at least 10 days in advance. They all have an opportunity to voice their opinion of the reclamation plan. And of course, on these sites where we're going to have to go to long-term remediation, we're going to have to involve the farmer and make sure that they're satisfied with the direction we're going and where we're going to end up.
There'll be some disruption to a farmer who owns these sites.
There certainly will. But the response that we've gotten from these farmers is absolutely wonderful. They are so delighted that land that has been out of use for their family for generations is now going to come back to farming within the next 1 to 5 years. And so, for example, visited with a farmer up at Renville Corners this last week, and he's got about 70 acres that he farms that's currently occupied by oil and gas wells that he's going to get back over the next 1 to 5 years. And so he is delighted with that and is looking forward to the fact that his children and grandchildren are going to be able to farm that land.
Yeah, the 1 to 5 years may sound like a long time, but really, if you've got to do it right, it's going to take that time.
You're right. There's no one size fits all. And each year is a little bit different in how much rainfall we get. And each piece of land has its own unique personality, its own soil characteristics. And every bit of that has to be built in. So we move slowly and carefully in the remediation and reclamation process.
So not to put too fine a point on it, what is the end game then?
Well, great question, Dave. The end game is to make the oil and gas site disappear. All equipment's gone. Any trace of it is gone. The land is back into productive use, maybe for recreation, maybe for grazing, maybe for farming. But the land goes back to its original use, and no one should ever know that there was an oil and gas well there.
All right. Anything else that you'd like to cover? Did we cover it?
I think we covered everything.
Okay. Then I have just one other quick question. Because I was thinking about Oscar Zero. They saved the Oscar Zero missile site. Do you have a site where it's got like a historic oil well site that might be saved? I was just kind of curious.
You know, Dave, we haven't really considered that. I think that's a fascinating suggestion. And, of course, one of the things that we intend to do in this process is carefully document with a series of photographs and everything what takes place from the beginning of the plugging operation all the way through to final release of the site. So we'll have photographs of that, but we'll have to take that into consideration, actually preserving a site so that future generations can see what it was like to have an oil and gas well on your land.
And, of course, that will be a different site from the 50s wells, the 70s wells, and now the Bakken wells.
It certainly will. They're all very different. And so, for example, many of these were drilled in the 60s and 70s on a very – they're shallow wells, and they were drilled on a close spacing pattern. And the sites are very small, and the access roads almost look like two tracks. But – if you get into the 80s and you look at some of the well sites out in the Badlands, north of Medora and south of Watford City, very long scorial-covered access roads and sites built into the sides of hills and that sort of thing. And so each one has its own unique characteristics that have to be taken into account.
So just one other quick question. At first we talked about maybe keeping about 1,000 people employed. Is it going to work out to about 1,000, do you think? Or?
We think we're going to actually exceed that. Our original estimate on the plugging side was that it would involve about 15 people. We're finding out that it's actually taking closer to 50 to service all of the rig needs and all the cementing needs and all that sort of thing. So we're actually probably going to, instead of employing 500 people on the plugging side, we're probably going to exceed 1,000 people just on the plugging. And we had estimated about 12 people involved in the reclamation. We're finding out it's probably 2 to 3 times that number. So at least 1,000 people, we're probably going to be putting closer to 2,000 people back to work. And none of those people were employed 2 weeks ago.
Is there enough money in the CARES Act to do this?
We don't think the CARES Act money is going to be sufficient. It's what we could get. That's why the legislature set aside $10 million from the Abandoned Well Fund. And that's also why there are some bonds out there. There are single well reclamation bonds and quite a few treating plant bonds that there's a good chance those will be forfeited or confiscated by the state in order to offset some costs. But it's very unlikely that the $66 million will cover all the costs here. It's going to take some of their contribution, the oil industry's contribution to the Bannon Well Fund, and probably some individual oil company contributions as well.
And that concludes our series on oil well reclamation. I'm Dave Thompson.